just hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-fold way. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and tried to locate. This for the time, got time for no day. Whoa.
Welcome to another edition of the Chronos Podcast. I'm your host, AJ Groh, presented by OPW Commercial Services. Got a fun one today, talking the new landscape of media with Matt Russell. Matt, thanks for joining.
It's a pleasure to be here. I've enjoyed some of your previous pods, so it's great to always participate in what you enjoy consuming.
Yeah, love it. Give everybody a background. I always like to start, let guests talk a little bit about their bona fides, so everyone knows, hey, these aren't just two knuckleheads talking.
Yeah, still might be one knucklehead on my side, but I'll let the audience determine that. So I am this interesting mix of starting with a very classical investor background, worked at a big bank for 10 years, went into the world of private equity, and did not expect to ever leave that world, but I got enticed by the podcasting medium and what was happening in that business. And a little over 4 years ago, I made the move to Colossus, which was basically an investment media platform built around one podcast that was building out around other podcasts. So it helped, you know, get inside the business of that, build up some of the platform. And did that for 4 years. So it was this mix of my interest in the business world and all the unique dynamics that make it tick. And then this beautiful medium that we have here, podcasting and whatever it is, whether it's just pure audio or that audio video component, those two things are two passions of mine. And, you know, I think we're going to get into a little bit of why on this very episode.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about this. So broadly, I'm a massive consumer of podcasts. I would put my consumption up there with anybody else. I don't really listen to music. I just listen to the podcast. So this is very important to me too. So the reason that I wanted to talk to you is we've got had a really interesting situation in, I guess, what we would call the podcast creator world with Ryan Russillo, who's with ESPN for a long time on the radio and TV side, moved over to The Ringer several years ago. Which is Bill Simmons' company, obviously really centered around podcasting. I think he was one of the people that really saw that medium taking off probably about, I don't know, he started probably 15 years ago, something like that. I remember being in high school, listening to it on the Page 2 website, and his contract was coming up. So there was a lot of talk about what was he going to do? Was he going to re-sign with The Ringer? Was he going to go to Barstool? Was he going to go to the Volume with Colin Cowherd? And nobody really knew what was going to happen. And then he winds up that we get the press release that we've got basically a door number four, which was starting his own company. But we've got Barstool being an investor in it, Dave Portnoy being an investor in it. Barstool is going to do the distribution. And so, first of all, just your take when you read that and see it, what was your initial takeaway?
Yeah, so I think it's very interesting, and I think you set up that context well. You have someone who has shown that he can consistently rank in the top of the sports podcast world for years and years and years. So if you go back to when Russillo joined The Ringer, 2019 timeframe, over that time, you basically had his podcast, the Simmons podcast, Pardon My Take, which is at Barstool. These are kind of three core, steady, always in the top rankings, and they have listener bases. And the interesting thing about Russillo is, you know, he had a podcast before. He started up again at The Ringer, and his audience came with him, which I think is one of the key distinctions. So that tells you a little bit of something about where the power lies in you know, in terms of the ESPN powerhouse versus the talent. And I think that is, you know, a lot of what's interesting about this is the shifting dynamics. When I look at the deal with Barstool, and that is still how I frame it in my head, is you have an interesting situation here where Russillo, I think over the years, has been interested in owning his institution, not just being someone who is, you know, a piece of a broader pie, a cog in the machine. And I will credit Ryan Glasspiegel at Front Office Sports, who's kind of been the sole source of information and very on top of this one. But he laid out to me, you know, the basics of this deal, which are, yes, this is going to be all done through Russillo's own production company, which likely means that he holds the IP. He keeps that ownership. You know, if his contract is up in several years, he's bringing whatever he produced over to the next stop. But with that said, everything that he will be doing will be monetized, distributed. Basically, the infrastructure to make it happen will be done by Barstool. So if I were to say, like, symbolically, what does that really mean? It's Russillo saying, I actually own the audience. You're not necessarily going to deliver this audience to me, which I think was what most media companies were trying to offer previously. It's a new era. Audiences are very attached to the personality specifically, and less so the platforms. But I need help with all the infrastructure that goes behind it. And I think what Barstool has done is pretty distinct from what The Ringer has done. And I think that's where a lot of this comes into play in terms of what will be possible for him to achieve at Barstool when it comes to video, which The Ringer, for all that they have done in the audio space, was incredibly slow to move into video. And I think one of the dynamics there is the Spotify ownership, which doesn't get brought up much, but I think plays a major role. But even simple things like merch monetization, you don't see much of that happening at The Ringer, whereas Barstool is a well-oiled machine in this regard. So it kind of raises the floor of what's possible. So I thought this was quite interesting. And you have, on the one hand, yes, the company that Russillo will have, which can be a lot of different things. We don't have a lot of details on what exactly that will include. But then also somewhat of a traditional deal is what I would expect on the actual relationship with Barstool and kind of bringing that over, getting all of that infrastructure behind you. So that was my initial take. And I think there's some things that are telling in terms of where the future goes that tap into a lot of those themes.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of keys. And as I've spent a lot of time, probably more time, you know, I probably spent more time than the average person thinking about how this was going to go. This wasn't exactly something I was bringing up in text threads about where everyone was going to go. But as I was thinking about this and wondering where he was going to go, you got a couple things. One, you mentioned the infrastructure. You know, this is, and we'll use him as an example, but broadly, when you have these real personality driven people, how do they bring the infrastructure, right? Who's going to deliver that most? Because that is key. You know, as much as it's important, obviously, bringing the audience, you know, starting your own deal is a whole different thing when you're hiring producers and hiring editors and dealing with all that. And so it was, you know, where was he going to go that delivered that? You nailed the video piece. Obviously, it's key over at Barstool and the monetization. And we just saw, was it yesterday, the Big 12 met with Portnoy just about basically like, help us out, get our brands out there, which was interesting. So they are obviously very good about that. But the thing that was most interesting to me was we are dealing with basically two essentially as different of cultures as you can get for the size that they are. And so that's where I was wondering is Russillo, does he really want to align himself with Barstool and all that comes with that versus The Ringer, where let's face it, it is a completely different ideology, completely different culture there. And so my take initially was this is him kind of having your cake and eating it too, kind of thing, to where he can still keep a little bit of distance and say, no, I'm, you know, this is my company. They just invested, but they're handling everything. So he's obviously got the relationship with PFT and Big Cat and the PMT guys, but the infrastructure piece I want to drill down on, because I think that's something that's broadly going on in this ecosystem. How do you look at that piece specifically when we're looking at the future? Is this going to be a situation where it winds up like, hey, it's basically, you know, it's Barstool, it's The Ringer, it's, you know, it's a couple of these other companies that everyone's just going to have to plug into? You know, no one gives Adam Carolla credit in podcast one, but that's, you know, probably the OG there. So how do you look at overall the different infrastructures, if you want to call it?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you're right about Barstool and The Ringer both establishing themselves as streaming first platforms. And they are moving increasingly into live things, and you can tune in the moment, but it's all individuals seeking out this material versus the previous media landscape of I turn on the TV, I put an ESPN on, and that's what's on. You know, it's not your regularly scheduled programming where you're connecting from one to the thing to the next. You're opting in to pick whatever is on these platforms. And they're not individuals, right? They've shown the ability to actually take an approach where, you know, one show is supportive of the next. There's a strategy in terms of building up things around them. And I think that's unique, whereas it's interesting because you're seeing the entire kind of media landscape divvy up the pie a little bit differently. And I think, to your point on, you know, the optics of Russillo joining Barstool, I think a year ago, 2 years ago, this doesn't happen. And there's a few reasons why. It has a certain reputation, whether or not, you know, that's changed at all over the years. I think some people hear it and it's just a polarizing business with polarizing people. Dave's certainly at top of that. But in recent years, they've shown the ability to extend, bring in people like John Gruden, who does not necessarily fall into all of the shenanigans that most of the, you know, younger employees, you know, deal with. And more recently, the FS1 deal, which is very interesting, where you have a weekday block, 2 hours of Barstool programming that's happening on FS1. You have the college football show, you know, with Portnoy very involved. And I think that's a big thing for Russillo, you know, joining anyone maybe with more of an established reputation joining. Those are major things that to me also represent some form of infrastructure, you know, in terms of it's not just what are we doing individually for you, it's what are the relationships that we're creating outside of this. And I think all of that, you know, builds up in terms of what they can offer, which looks different than The Ringer, which I would just attach to Spotify again, you know, where some of the restrictions are a little bit different. That going on YouTube, which they've leaned into recently, took some time because Spotify is building up their own video presence.
Right.
So that flexibility just gives you so much more opportunity to take what you're doing and monetize it in multiple different ways, just through versus through one isolated channel.
Yeah. The other piece of this too, which is very careful language that, you know, Barstool and Dave Portnoy were investing in to this company. We saw, not as much recently, obviously, but you know, a couple of years ago, this big run on production companies getting bought. Hello Sunshine for the number one. I guess you could call that the apex. that was the peak. That's the part that's really interesting to me. Is like, what? First of all, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean for them to invest in this company that's a startup, but they're also handling all the distribution? Is this just a vertical thing? What happens down the road, you know, 3-5 years from now, if relationship turns or landscape changes and all of a sudden Russillo wants to take his ball and go home? Like, how do you see that? And obviously we don't have a lot of details on what the full investment looks like, but you figure it's got to be enough for him to say, okay, I'm willing to hand over some of this to you guys. So what's your initial read on what that impact could be down the road?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, and especially within the context of what's happened to Barstool previously, where they've had major talents like Alex Cooper with Caller Daddy, the McAfee show, even more recently Bustin' with the Boys, where they played some role in building up these shows, these personalities. And there is some alignment of interest in the early stages where creator comes in, you have the network, they both benefit as the popularity grows. But as you get closer to the contract end, all of a sudden the creator can say, well, now that I'm established, you've done the majority of the work that you will do for me. I'm not going to get that same bump from your audience and platform, and I can do a lot of this on my own. And they leave. And, you know, Barstool has the 3 to 4 years of monetization that they got, and that's about it. So you're not creating this long-term alignment. Here is an alternative to that, where by investing into the production company, that means even after this 3 to 4 year period, which might look incredibly similar, you know, in terms of that commercial deal, if you separate these into two deals, the commercial deal might look very similar to what a traditional creator deal would look like. And then the investment deal, what that does is it just keeps some joint ownership of the IP and then future upside, you know, even if you were to leave the network. And to me, that feels like much better long-term alignment, where you don't have this push and pull of how big do I want to make my talent. You should never have to think twice about propping up your talent, giving them the platform, right, making them as big as possible. But the reality of the incentives created a system where that was a struggle. And if you look back in the early days of ESPN, they used to think about this. And SportsCenter was designed in many ways to limit the personalities. The idea was you show up and you know exactly what you're going to get. Then you started to have some personalities push against them. I think, you know, most famously Patrick and Oberman, where there was a lot of fights with the production team because they didn't want them to become bigger than the show. I think that world is gone now. Everyone has leaned in and created this, you know, or understood the reality of that personalities drive this. And a setup like this creates more long-term alignment. So the details of what that looks like, I would love to know. And Glass-Steagall is probably the only one who does know. What it does is it creates a system where any benefit that's added, you know, through the course of the commercial relationship is not just immediately wiped away, at, you know, if he were to choose to leave or do something different.
And I think it's interesting too, on the Portnoy's side, the one that, you know, whoever's making the investment, and you mentioned the alignment piece, he obviously wants them to be as big as they possibly can be. But at least now, if they decide to go somewhere else, you know, Alex Cooper goes and signs a huge deal with Sirius, like, then you've got, all right, go get the best deal you can get. I still get a piece of it, which is good. And so it does definitely help with that. There's another part of this that I think is really interesting. When you've got what starts out as a very dominant personality, that Russillo goes over, he starts the Ryan Russillo show with The Ringer. It was very much him, but it evolved. And then it became, they always work up these popular segments. And so Life Advice became a huge one, you know, brought a decent amount of people to it. And at least expanded out beyond just the traditional sports aspect. But you've got key personalities to that, which are, you know, nephew Kyle, for those that don't know Bill Simmons, it's his nephew. And so it was affectionately referred to as nephew Kyle in the beginning. And then somebody like Wargon and Cerruti to an extent. I would assume Cerruti goes with him just because that's been, you know, as his producer, we'll probably follow him. But that's a key segment that now, I guess, do you recreate it over there? Do you try and do it with different people? You know, that's so. How do you look at those where you've got some keys that are not coming along that people liked? Do you think that you try to recreate that, or do you just punt on that and say, hey, we're not going to try and recreate this with different people?
I would bet, I would take out loans from the bank to bet that that gets recreated wherever he goes. And it's only based on the history of him doing that for some time at ESPN, getting kind of slaps on the wrist from the producers to cut it, bringing it back at The Ringer. And you can tell, you know, inside that there's a passion to do that. I think one of the things that Colin Cowherd, who is great just in terms of having perspective on media, detailed was that, you know, many of these shows, he used the kind of analogy, the sports is the cake, and then, you know, Life Advice in this case is the icing, and many people just come for the icing, but it's what gives you that more mass appeal, that more commercial appeal. There's this common theme of joint listening now, where, you know, in a car you're gonna have a couple that's listening to it rather than just the male or just the female. So that's a major theme, and I think like that segment is perfectly symbolic of all of those things. I agree with you. Cerruti seems like hand in hand with Russillo, so I would expect that happens. And while I think many of us will deeply miss Nephew Kyle's contributions, Morgan's stepped in and showed, you know, he could be a valuable addition. And I think they will just look to recreate, you know, chemistry with whoever might be right to include in that. And they're creative types, which I will expect them to tap into some interesting personalities. But it will, you know, be, it will highlight, you know, kind of where the talent is. But, you know, the more you hear people talking about who's missing, who's not on there, it will stand out. So those are the little things that are fun to watch and fall into the art over science aspect of all of this.
Yeah. And you mentioned Cowher, and I want to talk about the volume for a little bit because I thought he was going to go to the volume. They have a, you know, they've got a really strong relationship. You know, they're obviously pretty close. I've always loved the two of them talking together. And the volume is very different. You know, Cowher runs it, and I think is very proud of the way he runs it, very differently than a lot of these companies where it's, you know, you want to live in Chicago, live in Chicago. You want to live in LA, live in LA. You live wherever. Seems to be very work-life balance focused versus the Barstool world, which is, you know, hey, you're going to be pimping the brand, so to speak. You're going to be showing up, you know, doing a lot of different things, which I don't expect Russillo to do. But where do you think the volume stands in the sports world? I think Colin's view, at least my take, Colin likes to gravitate a little more towards the up-and-comers, maybe the lesser-known names that he thinks are really talented. But how long can you continue doing that before you need a big win and to get a big name over?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And if I had to guess, the volume and truly Colin was probably the mentor and person that guided Russillo on a lot of this. And just judging by, you know, their interactions, which I think are great for understanding media in general. You know, if you think about the waves, Colin and Ryan do a great job of just breaking that down in their own unique way. But I think this is probably, you know, a good distinction in terms of where we are, you know, innings wise in terms of adjusting to the new reality. Again, you go back in time, you had personalities were always big in media, but way back when there's only 5 channels. So the personalities had much less power. As we moved into the digital world where everything is increasingly opt-in, you have way more platforms, you have way more ability to do it on your own and test new things. So that leaves more power in their hands. And once somebody becomes established, they can be their own institutions. So I think that's what you have here. Him coming into the volume wouldn't have made as much sense because it's not going to be this big pickup. It's really only going to be infrastructure added. And, you know, that is something that he could have gotten from the Ringer, from Barstool, or the volume without having the production company. I think the production company is for these people that could be consider themselves institutions as is. What Colin is doing is very interesting because if you hit on somebody who's up and coming, if you train them incredibly well, if, you know, you give them the platform and they reach new levels, then there could be major upside there. And that's where it'll be interesting to know if you ever see these type of deals trickle down into that world where somebody starting out is no longer hired as talent. They're hired as, you know, their LLC. So it's anything that they're doing is thought of as its own media entity. And to me, there's like a strong case to be made that if media is personality driven, then people are businesses. And all of the opportunities that come up, they are rarely just in the category of sponsorship. They are usually in events and campaigns and a variety of different things where the doors open. Distribution is an incredibly valuable asset. And a lot of people will look to, you know, get that distribution in exchange for something else. So if you start to trickle it down all the way to somebody is starting up and they come into the volume and they themselves are maybe not a full distribution company, but they're an LLC, that would give Colin the ability to similarly prop them up, give them the platform, try to grow them into something bigger. And then in the future, if they were to decide to leave the volume, He could still maintain some upside while not, you know, while giving them the freedom to explore more things. So that is where I think it gets most interesting when thinking about the future, is if you see it start to evolve into something like that. The challenge is going to be like there's only room for so many of these. And what is the distinct skill that's required to do that successfully? I think Barstool and the Ringer, like I think Dave and Bill Simmons have both shown incredible ability to spot talent early in, you know, very unique localized markets. I don't consume as much of the volume, but I would imagine based on what he said that Colin attempts to do the same thing. That is a key piece of the puzzle, is that ability to scout that talent. And then it, you know, gets into the weeds of businesses and how you decide to structure and some of the more, you know, what would be mean to most people, very boring stuff. But figuring out ways where you can create that long-term alignment, I think will be the next piece of the puzzle.
It's funny. I've been thinking about this, and you mentioned a couple different things that have made me think of it more, is the TV piece. So we've got the volume and Barstool both have FS, you know, basically have Fox as an outlet, whether it be the big new kickoff or the FS1 block. Colin obviously has his show on FS1. You mentioned, you know, McAfee, obviously, and that's a very unique situation where ESPN is licensing that content. And so it was for the longest time, obviously, it was we want to be on TV. And then it shifted towards, well, why be on TV? I mean, we could just have a podcast. And now it's like, all right, well, the goal with a podcast is to eventually get it on TV. Is that something that's going to take off? Because you mentioned, hey, there's only so much, right? There's only so many blocks available. And is FS1 or is ESPN just going to have 8 hours a day of podcasts that are just being shown on TV? Or is it, you know, hey, this is just a better medium than talk shows?
Yeah, I think there's a few things, and I could have potentially brought this up earlier. One of the interesting things about Russillo having a production company is, let's say hypothetically, Barstool wants to explore what they did with college football into, you know, other sports atmospheres. Well, Russillo, well known as an NBA personality, might be able to do a block with the NBA on television, whether it is, you know, through one of the major networks like an FS1, whether it's through something else. And even just having, you know, a difference in terms of it being through Russillo's production company rather than through Barstool might make a difference in terms of those negotiations, but they still have the power and infrastructure. Now, in terms of the perspective of the TV businesses and some of these networks, I think there's two pieces. One, you're bringing in an entirely new audience, which I think is a net positive. And we, you know, we saw this with McAfee. You're trying to get into the younger generation. How do you do that? You bring these personalities in. But the way that they're doing it is they're licensing a lot of this content, which makes it way more cost effective as well. So, you know, depending on the deal, many times they're not building out the full studio and infrastructure, which is just outrageous in terms of the costs associated with that. By putting that onto whoever you're licensing, if it were Russillo or if it's Barstool, you're passing off a lot of those costs. So now you have a much more cost-effective way to port in a new audience. And I think that's an interesting angle here. And I think it's, you know, when you listen to Russillo, he's made some comments about his inability to be featured on ESPN television over the years. And I think, you know, he's driven by a lot of the same thing that everybody else is driven by in terms of proving people wrong. So I would not be shocked in the least if we were to see an FS1 deal featuring his content somewhere around the NBA and what was happening during that season.
Yeah, that's a key, obviously, that in an interesting wrinkle. And for anyone that's not as plugged in on this, Russillo was, yeah, he's a big NBA guy, and he was really the Ringer's number one NBA guy for the entire time he was there, pretty much until they brought in Zach Lowe, who was originally with Grantland, probably one of Bill's best finds, bringing him to the forefront. Zach eventually stays with ESPN when Grantland Foles was with ESPN, and then was a very surprising layoff. I think it was last year, maybe. And so Zach joined the Ringer, and now all of a sudden, when it comes to negotiating a contract with Russillo, and Bill's perspective obviously is, hey, I've got a number one NBA guy that everybody loves, and that's, let's face it, probably more plugged in with the league. He's got Rob Mahoney, who people like as kind of an up and coming NBA guy. I'm not a huge fan. I don't really understand.
Ooh, interesting.
He's fine. I have a big issue. I'll go off on a tangent real quick. When everybody is universally talking about how great somebody is, my alarm bells immediately go up, and it's like, are we sure? Are we really feel this way? Or are we just saying this because we feel good about it?
I like to think that I was on the Rob band early as he started to make some appearances elsewhere in the Ringer universe, especially on the movie stuff. And so it's more like a band that I feel like I was into before they blew up, and I'm riding the wave. But I appreciate the contrarian approach.
I like Rob.
No. We have this.
Not that this is going to get aggregated. If you guys aggregate me all you want, I don't care. I think he's fine. But they've got Zach and they've got Rob. And so they've got two guys who are NBA first / NBA only. And so now all of a sudden, Russillo's a little expendable. They've got some NFL people. I'm not really that crazy about a lot of the Ringer's NFL stuff. I personally am a huge fan of Bills, always will be. He was, been a huge part of my life. But I think they focused a lot more on the TV and movie kind of stuff. And they're phenomenal at that. I think they're by far the best at what they do there. But when you're negotiating, let's try to get in Bill's mind here, is you've got a guy that's pretty consistently ranked in the top 10. He is, I'm going to say, show-wise, he records from his house. He's not coming into the office. He's not, doing a lot of in-person stuff. He's not showing up on rewatchables. He's not doing a lot of cross promotional kind of stuff, but he's a huge name with what he does. So put us in Bill's mind as he's negotiating this with Ryan, assuming that he wanted Ryan back. But what goes through his head? What are all the different things that he's thinking about when he's negotiating this?
I think he would have always preferred to keep him in-house. And if I were guessing, again, total projection, he probably had some limitations based on Spotify's limitations. And yes, there are certainly the fallback options, but what you lose is not just the NBA guy or a football guy. He plugs in so many different holes, and he attracts this generalist mass market audience with everything he does. Whereas most of the people, that you're basically trying to take a sum of the parts, which rarely works in media. So I think it's definitely a loss. And I would guess that he just couldn't compete on the same terms that, Barstool or some of the other networks out there could. What I guess he could offer was, a cash dollar up front and a lot less flexibility. He doesn't ask a lot from Russillo, and it is just kind of the Sunday nights. But my assumption is he probably did whatever he could with the limitations that he wasn't really able to provide some of that same flexibility that you can get from a network that's 100% owned, by Portnoy, who's also able to put his own personal capital into it. So that's kind of my piece, or my belief on the first part is kind of like the corporate restrictions, which would play a role. And I would attribute it more to that. Now, is he going to be able to lean on, Lowe and Mahoney and some other people coming in? Absolutely. And I think he'll just take that in stride. But if I were to guess, it's a disappointing outcome for him in this regard.
Yeah. I want to talk about the economics of it a little bit, because this is something that I don't think a lot of people are familiar with when it comes to podcasting. You've obviously got ad revenue. That's the big driver of all this. What does it look like? I would say for just a podcast in general, Like, if you can walk us through the economics of that, you know, how those, all the different levers to drive revenue on those. And then I want to shift into what, you know, what do the economics look like for the future of these types of deals in terms of, you know, how does that, A, who's driving the ad revenue, right? Who owns the ad revenue?
Elephant in the room in terms of the ad revenue.
Who will get, you know, how will that get distributed? So first walk us through just podcasting in general. How do those economics work?
Yeah, there's basically two different models. You have the standard kind of commodity-based model, which is we're going to base this on, you know, the amount of listens, and there's going to be a market price. So I would say for higher quality, you know, kind of market standard, you're looking at for every 1,000 listeners, you're getting $25. So you can kind of gross that up and say, okay, if I have 100,000 listeners, I'm going to get, do the math, $2,500. Let's say, how many can we layer into an episode? If we can do four, you know, that's 10,000 an episode. And you could just basically run the math that way. And those numbers are based on, you know, some, you know, behind the scenes math of, okay, if I'm getting 1,000 listeners, what do I need to convert for this product? But that's just like the mass market. You have this other, you know, side of the market, which is I am attaching myself to these podcasters, their personalities, and there's a brand association, you know, with that. And there's some other big piece of what I'm trying to accomplish. So you see this with some shows where the ad revenue is ultimately going to be probably underwater versus what the ultimate contract is. And this happened with a lot of the platforms where you would see, you know, $60 million deals, $80 million deals for podcasters where, you know, after 4 years, they hadn't made their money back in terms of selling those ads. So that's like, you know, kind of a mixed step. And then there's just the big brands that will spend. Most recently, Bussin' with the Boys getting $30 million over 3 years. But they are, you know, funding pretty much all of sports media right now is the sports gambling, you know, apps
and I want to dive into that further here in a little bit.
Yes, it's a very interesting dynamic.
Let's do it now because I don't think we really can have the conversation about economics without the gambling sites. So whether it's DraftKings, whether it's FanDuel, BetMGM, it is everywhere. It has been everywhere since they started, and there's just the financial conversation. And then there's also the, you know, the conflict or if you want to just chalk it up to the moral conversation as well that goes on with that. But how do these, if you've now got them getting into the actual content game versus just spending their money advertising, which I think is a great deal. And we've seen them do some TV stuff as well. I think it's a great idea. It makes a lot of sense for them, but what if they start saying, all right, well, we're spending, you know, millions of dollars on advertising. Like, why don't we just bring these people into the fold and we can reallocate that money? And we're just got it by being the, you know, the distributor or the, you know, presenting sponsor, whatever you want to call it. So what happens if they just decide, screw it, we're not funding all these other podcasts, we're bringing them all in house?
Yeah, I think there are risks to bringing anything inside the fold just because, you know, anything that's corporate branded and it truly in your face starts to feel like propaganda. Now, could they launch their own networks? Yeah, like you've seen, you know, various different forms of this where there's like tangential ties to media networks. And if you're getting that talent, okay. But you will have some of the same dynamics where you will be playing off of one another. And by not having to bring them, they keep some of the flexibility of being able to pull back dollars if they see things not working out. So I think there's benefits from that side of things where this is, you know, a marketing expense that can be throttled up or down rather than, kind of an investment and an ongoing expense into perpetuity where there's a lot more upfront costs. And it's kind of similar to the FS1. Licensing, you know, content where you're offloading a lot of the costs associated with that and just kind of keeping the main thing with what you're trying to accomplish. But what's kind of interesting to me is, like, you know, when I look back several years ago and I saw this, it was during kind of the era of land grab. So you typically have this in industries where, you know, everyone's fighting. There's a ton of competition and no one's necessarily established themselves as the clear leader in the market. And in those cases, you will often, you know, spend even uneconomically to fight off competition such that, you know, when you're left standing, then you can reap the benefits and the rewards. Now you do have a bit more of mature industry. And I think it just points to the reality that sports gambling is incredibly lucrative for the books. And casinos historically were great businesses. I think some things got lost in terms of, you know, the bankruptcies of Caesars and whatnot. That had a lot more to do with leverage than it did the underlying businesses themselves. So I think that is kind of a signal where when you see a product that consistently advertises over and over and over in the market, that means this is a profitable channel for them and they're able to make enough money, you know, from their customers to continue doing that. So I think that's like worth mentioning and pointing out. But it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, because right now it really is funding, you know, the majority of this media.
Yeah. And they're doing a good job of hitting both national and local too. Mm-hmm. Rights to Ricky Sanchez, a Sixers podcast that
big
I'm
big fan.
I love it. Oh, perfect. That's great. No, obviously I had to name, had to say the name. But even there, you know, they're presented by DraftKings, and that's something that you wouldn't expect for now. They're a very large and they're the best, you know, best local podcast that exists. But it's interesting that they've gone in that direction as well. To wrap up though, you know, winners and losers from this, you obviously in these situations, we assume that Russillo is a winner in this, but how do you see, if you had to divvy up who wins and loses in this situation?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a group of creators or talent personalities that are finding more ways to truly capture their value. So, you know, it's very hard to measure where the value should accrue. And in media, most of it would go up to the parent organization, while there would be some capped rate that went to the actual talent and personalities. So I think this represents a shift there. I think the streamers or the digital first businesses are also winners here. And, you know, it's going to be figuring out exactly what happens with platforms versus personalities. You know, again, you have kind of a hybrid here with Barstool and a production company linking together. But this is showing that, you know, the those businesses have growing reputations. Their ability to license out to some of these networks is a signal. So I think that's a positive. And I think, you know, in terms of losers, you might make the case that, you know, and I think this has been happening for a while, like the middle of, you know, the average talents and personalities kind of lose out here, because you're going to have more incentive to push up that top personality where you have a long-term investment in them over maybe someone else who's just on a standard contract. So you can make a case that it just kind of pushes the power law in that direction and crowds out some of those people who are then left on their own to become something bigger.
I love it. We could probably keep going for hours on this. We'll make sure once we get the actual details and they come through, we'll have to
Glass-Spiegel at Front Office Sports. I don't know him. I only read him, but I have to shout him out just because he's been the one on this and he's sourced on a lot of stuff. So I give that guy a lot of credit.
Yeah. Well, and let's give yourself a lot of credit too. Let's get some plugs going. But Matt Russell, where can everybody find you?
I am on Twitter, which my handle, Russell Matt, it's not, you know, last name, first name. I host Business Breakdown. So if you're into some of this nitty gritty structuring and in the weeds of financial statements, you can check out the Business Breakdowns podcast as well. And any of the social media networks I'm out there.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. We'll have you back once we figure out the details and we can really start coming through this and hopefully have you on as a regular contributor. But this was awesome. I love this stuff, and it's always fun to find somebody else that loves this stuff as much as I do. So
absolutely.
Again, thank you for coming on. This has been another episode of the Chronos Podcast, sponsored by OPW. Appreciate your time. We'll catch you next time.